Trendstorm.
Welcome back to Trendstorm. Now let's take a look at Monday's Putin-Trump summit. Next Monday's first ever formal summit between Presidents Putin and Trump will be aimed at stabilizing the world order as it undergoes an unprecedented and somewhat bumpy transition from unipolarity to multipolarity. The two leaders had previously met on the sidelines of several other international functions, but hadn't hitherto had an entire summit dedicated to their talks, which come at a crucial time in global affairs. Russian-American relations have bottomed out. At the same time as the U.S. took the lead in sparking a so-called trade war with the EU and China. Previously unshakable transatlantic ties are now under strain after Trump demanded that America's European allies contribute more to NATO, which has weakened Western unity when taken together with the newfound trade tensions. There are also growing concerns over the intensification of the Iranian-Israeli proxy war in Syria following the defeat of most of the terrorists there, and the regional implications of the U.S.'s unilateral withdrawal from the 2015 nuclear deal. Both issues are expected to figure prominently in the upcoming summit because the U.S. understands the pivotal role that Russia could play in restraining Iran in Syria, or so it believes, while also acknowledging the irreplaceable pressure valve function that it has for the Islamic Republic in providing much-needed relief for its economy following the impending reimposition of sanctions against it. Moving eastward along the Eurasian Rimland, another topic of conversation could be the U.S.'s renewed commitment to the war on Afghanistan, which affects Russia's security interests in the former Central Asian republics bordering the war-torn state. Concerning China, the proverbial elephant in the room, it's long been thought by some experts that Trump wants to pry Russia away from the People's Republic following the Obama administration's counterproductive geopolitical moves that only strengthen their strategic partnership against American interests, though this is much easier said than done and probably won't see any success. Even so, it wouldn't be unthinkable for Trump to try, however he might, though all of this remains in the realm of speculation for now. Altogether, when taking stock of the most likely west-to-east topics of NATO, the Mideast, and China that are expected to form the core subjects of discussion between the Russian and American leaders, the conclusion can be reached that they're trying to work together to bring some stability to the emerging new world order without surrendering their interest. Folks, I gotta say, everyone's sitting on the edge of their seats, and we just can't wait to see what happens at this upcoming meeting. So here on Trendstorm this week, we're going to give you a sneak peek of what you can expect. The first guest that we're going to speak to today on our program is Ms. Zoya Conover. She's a political commentator from the U.S. state of Georgia.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Zoya, how much flexibility do Trump's trade and NATO disagreements with the EU give him in dealing with Russia? And are there any realistic ways that he can leverage this factor to his advantage, such as offering to scale back NATO or sanctions in exchange for Russia cooperating with him in the Mideast?
Trump is moving fast with his promises to American people to bring America back to prosperity, stability, and security. I can say the same about President Putin. Both presidents want to see their condition, and both presidents want to have ambitions to leave the best legacy. Of the trade disagreements with the EU and China, Trump now understands that these disagreements can have caused the EU to pivot towards China as a trading partner. And he can use this fact to bolster U.S. trade directly with Russia as a counter move. Even if the optics don't, U.S. markets will demand this kind of response to keep the American economy moving in the right direction. Regarding NATO's future, it may be in Trump's best interest to work with Russia to counter the global propaganda campaign of, in quote, Russian aggression by promising Putin that he will use his considerable control over the media to push back on these lies by directly confronting these hysteric public republics to show evidence of Russian aggression. Since we all know they cannot, as we cannot argue with 92% of people of Crimea who want to be back with Russia, then U.S. can begin to defund NATO and maybe even push back on other global liars who are NATO members. For this, Trump should expect more cooperation from Russia to help reduce tensions on the Mideast. On Russian side, Putin has proved again and again Russia is a democratic country and that he is open for peaceful, constructive negotiations with U.S. based on mutual respect.
Okay, these are some very relevant points, Zoya. Thanks a lot for mentioning them as well as some of the proposals. Now, while the war on terror in Syria is winding down, the Iranian-Israeli proxy one there is heating up. So what role can Russia and the U.S. play in preventing this from becoming a conventional conflict? And Zoya, how can the common interests that they both have in this provide a basis for rejuvenating their relations?
Well, Russia may be in the only country on the planet at this moment in time that actually has excellent relationships with Israel and Iran at the same time. How is this possible? Well, Russia has deep historical ties with Iran and recently collaborated with Iranians to rid Syria of ISIS in support of the Assad regime. On the other side, almost a million Russian Jews live in Israel. And this fact has always helped Russia and Israel acknowledge that their destinies are tied together. The confrontation between Iran and Israel can turn into a serious threat to the world. Russia, along with the U.S., must prevent such a conflict. Iran wants to sell its oil reserves and start to prosper, and Israel wants to maintain its security. Russia is in a unique position to broker a summit and bring these countries together to work out their differences. So, Russia can use their historical relations with two countries to negotiate. Don't forget that for Iran, Russia is a strategic ally in supporting Syria's President Bashar al-Assad. And Russia is also a potential partner in shaping the global gas market as the two countries with the largest reserves. In this case, maybe U.S. must reconsider sanctions on Iran.
Right. These are some pretty good ideas. I have to say, I mean, your points about Russia's role in the Mideast are very enlightening to a lot of our audience who may not have been aware of how skillfully Moscow has managed and balanced the Mideast since the 2015 anti-terrorist intervention. So, Zoya, now if we wrap everything up, for as ambitious as Trump's possible deal-making may be during the upcoming summit, he obviously can't forget that the entire meeting might become a major midterm issue depending on its outcomes. So how do you think this domestic political factor is weighing on his decisions in this regard?
Well, if Trump was left to his own gut instincts, he would likely pursue the friendliest possible dialogue and relations with Putin because these two men appear to actually like each other. Sadly, President Trump is boxed in by the extreme opinions of Republicans and Democrats that Russia is an enemy of the U.S., meddled in our elections, and poses a threat on the world stage. Unfortunately, the American public has been brainwashed by the media to agree with all of this propaganda. Therefore, we're likely to see a more formal and less warm meeting between the two leaders. And Trump may even offer up some kind of tough talk towards Putin that might win him some points back home. But regardless of all of the factors working against this meeting, Trump will still try and seek a more constructive relationship with Putin and Russia, because as the great Napoleon Bonaparte once said, better to have Russia as a friend and ally than an enemy.
Okay, now we're going to turn over and speak to Mr. John Stachelski. He's a PhD candidate at Yale University in the Department of Slavic Languages and Literatures, a research fellow at the Center for Syncretic Studies, and a writer at Fort Rus News.
Trendstorm.
Okay, John, the Western media portrays Russia as being in full control of everything that happens in Syria, though the country itself is sovereign, as is its Iranian partner. So what realistic possibility does President Putin even have in reaching a deal with Trump about the presence of Iranian forces in this country?
Well, as it happens, I learned the other day from Mr. Trump that Russia is also apparently in control of Germany. So it seems that their reach is fairly extensive, or far more so than I think anyone realize, except for Trump. But I would say that it's important that we compare the situation in Syria to the U.S. military relationship to its partners, say, in Poland. Poland's primary military goal, I would say, at this point, is absolute interpenetrability with NATO. And as a matter of fact, the U.S. is using the upcoming NATO forum to dictate not only what percentage of its GDP Poland should be spending on defense funding, but also what percentage of that percentage should go into spending on new hardware, et cetera. So I think Americans have this mentality based on their own actions with their allies, that ally is some kind of code word for vassal. And so we can't even imagine that there could be another type of relationship. So in regards to Syria, in my opinion, Putin's role is vastly overestimated. I think that even if he was inclined to try to push out the Iranians, he would have to negotiate with that. So, but despite that, Trump's hand is even weaker. Despite what Trump and Netanyahu are demanding of the situation, I think it's increasingly out of control and certainly not in their favor as Assad continues to win victories in various regions all over Syria. So I think the one thing that Russia really needs to do is move on its situation dawdling with selling those S-300 anti-air defense systems, which are becoming a pretty real necessity there.
Okay, I understand. All this makes sense, John, and it's a very valid explanation of what's going on in Syria. Now, just as Trump's probably going to use NATO as a balancing leverage in his negotiations with President Putin, so too could the Russian leader use his country's strategic partnership with China in the same manner, each of which the other wants their counterpart to compromise on during these talks. So, John, if it comes down to it, which of the two could, so to speak, blink first? Or could a comprehensive deal involving all these parties possibly be in the works?
Well, that's a good question. Again, I think Trump's hand is pretty weak here. The demands he's been making on his NATO member nations are putting the alliance on pretty shaky ground itself. And as for his relationship with China, I would say that the trade war he's initiated is a pretty disastrous policy by any estimation. And it's essentially forcing China to make the very moves the U.S. has been trying to restrain them from making, especially because it's sort of pushed China to make economic connections within the African and Arab world. As far as Russia's relationship with China, I would say the road to cooperation between those countries has been pretty rocky. But I would say these new circumstances are kind of fertile ground for deepening that relationship. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization is expanding its spheres of influence every year, and now has something like 80% of the Eurasian landmass incorporated. So, and I also have been looking into Russia's relationship to China's Belt and Road policy, which they've been pushing quite a bit. And I think that that's seriously bad news for NATO. I also read recently that the Chinese Defense Minister Wei Fang made his first visit to Moscow, and he pledged military support specifically for countering U.S. aggression, and he even mentioned the Middle East specifically. So that being said, I don't think that we can really say anyone is quite blinking yet, but the relationship between China and Russia as it deepens might eventually become a pretty serious challenge for them.
Okay, John. So overall, how successful do you think the outcome of the Putin-Trump summit will be in stabilizing the world order, particularly regarding the Mideast, which is one of the geostrategic center points of the Eastern Hemisphere in general? And do you predict that it'll set the groundwork for restoring relations between these two great powers, or will it just be a highly publicized dud?
Well, there's been a lot of back and forth lately, and it, of course, made a lot of headlines that Putin agreed to pull out a considerable amount of forces from Syria. But this, of course, comes, as I said earlier, and at a time when Assad has secured a lot of high-priority areas. So I think Putin's kind of modus operandi is to avoid conflict if possible. And he's been really successful at maneuvering around these situations, which have led people into a lot of pundits into real panic that there could be some kind of broader war encompassing, you know, the not just Syria and Iran, but also Israel and perhaps the United States and Russia as well. But Trump has promised to normalize relations with Russia. That was part of his campaign promises, from what I recall, which of course has become an easy talking point for those people who are totally imbibed in this narrative that Trump is simply comfortable fostering these relationships with so-called authoritarian leaders because they're of the same, they're cut of the same cloth, so to speak. They're absolutely convinced that America has this right or reason to act as a kind of global referee, and therefore that normalizing relationships with Russia is somehow granting Putin amnesty from this world court where the U.S. reigns as judge and jury. And I think that most of the media in that sense is more optimistic than me about Russian-American relationships. I don't think that the president really has the kind of singular authority attributed to him, which would enable him to drastically change a deep and long-developing geopolitical situation. When Trump made that statement a couple of weeks ago, I don't know if you remember, about that he in some way recognized Crimea or talked about Crimea's close relationship to Russia, then, you know, shortly after, when John Bolton was in Moscow, he was quick to kind of qualify and rein in that statement and try, you know, say that the U.S.'s position is that it does not recognize Crimea. So there's much more at play than the two presidents can really decide in a single conversation. But I'm hoping that the continued dialogue will play a part in improving the relationship, sure.
Trendstorm. Okay, now if we think back on what both of our guests shared with us today, we can see that both Zoya and John agree that this summit is going to be very important. However, there are differing interpretations over the leeway that President Trump has in negotiating any type of deal with President Putin, because at the end of the day, as we were reminded of, there are certain domestic constraints on Trump's decision-making, and there are also certain things that he might not be comfortable parting with. For example, making a type of quid pro quo deal concerning sanctions or NATO in Europe might not be something even he himself would be able to impose, given the fact that these are multilateral issues that require the full participation of the other members. Nevertheless, what's going to happen on Monday? Who knows? But I hope that this program gave us all a glimpse at what we might be able to expect. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, as well as what you expect to happen this Monday, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.